Hey, good evening, everyone, and good Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to our three ideas in 30 minutes. Hope everyone enjoys the chicken nuggets. If anyone is interested in sponsoring a future three ideas, please let me know. We always welcome. Tonight is sponsored by Boker Ton Synagogue. And as always, our learning should be in Aliyah and Neshama of Esther Tehila Bas Gavriel Pinchas. This Shabbos, we have a very lengthy double parsha. Buckle up. Or spend more time at the Kiddush Club, whatever it is that your habit is. But it's going to be a long Torah. I didn't really endorse it. It was a bad rabbi joke. But please, it's a long Torah reading, so we should definitely take some time to appreciate the Kedusha of the Torah that we have an opportunity to hear from not just one Parsha, but two Parshios, and one that is particularly very long. In the second of them, of course, we know it starts in Michu Kosai Teilechu, talking about the Tochacha. And the Torah tells us, "Im bichu kosai teilechu, if you walk in my ways, then everything good is going to happen. And if not, then there's going to be the tocha." Asks the Tolna Rebbe in this beautiful, beautiful piece. He says, "What is the language of bichu kosai?" Rashi, of course, tells us, "Shetiyu amelim Torah," that you have to be amel in Torah. You have to engross yourself in Torah. Okay, we have to understand why it is that that's such a central value, that that is the deciding factor, whether there is good or bad descending upon this world. But he asks a more fundamental question, which is, why is the word chok used? How did Rashi know that when the Torah uses the word bichu kosai, which the root word is chok, how did Rashi know that that was going to mean shetiyu amelim Torah? How did Rashi create a connection between the two of them? And therefore, says the Tolna Rebbe, something so beautiful. He says that there are really two elements of limud Torah. One is what we would call knowing Torah. Every one of us has an obligation to know Torah. Now, my obligation to know Torah might be a little bit different than Rosh Hashanah's obligation to know Torah. My ability to learn Torah might be different than some of the Gedolim that we visit on the fly-in this week, simply because they have capacities that I don't have, right? Hashem created me with limitations. I don't have the mind, I don't have the genius, I don't have the memory of some other people. And so when it comes to remembering or understanding Torah, everyone in this room is going to be different. Your expectation of understanding and knowledge of Torah might be different than someone else's. However, he says there's another component of Torah, and that is the component of Torah known as Amelis B'Torah. So let's read inside just a few of his lines. He says, right at the top of page number one, L'chora barasha kol yudi nidrosh lilmo Torah kedei sheyedes kol pratei amitzos. Everyone has to know all of Torah. Aval mayinim ba'amel. What is the unique significance of being amel b'Torah, of fighting, of battling, of grinding your teeth over Torah? He says, furthermore, in the next underline, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah tells us, La'olam ligros inish afal gav de mishkach, v'afal gav de lo yadi mai ka'amar, that a person should learn Torah, even if you're going to forget it, and even if you don't understand what you're saying. Huh? Ask the Tolna Rebbe, if I'm going to forget it, and if I don't understand why I'm saying, so what's the purpose of me learning? You go to the Daf Yomi Shir every morning, but you don't understand a word that Rabbi Sugarman says. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, you should still go to the Daf Yomi Shir. Why should I still go to the Daf Yomi Shir? I don't understand it. So he says, what is this notion of learning Torah irrespective of remembering Torah or irrespective of understanding Torah? And so if you turn to the next page. What?
So he
reads chok, you're getting there, but he reads it just a little bit differently. So he says on page two,
it's not about the daf,
it's about the yomi. He's going to say something similar to that, by the way, it's all joking aside. He says, v'kan, again, I'm just going my underlines, v'kan navo l'avchana gedola ben yediyas haTorah l'ben amel haTorah. He says there's a difference between knowing Torah and fighting and striving for Torah. Mitzvos Talmud Torah hamitvat beyediyas haTorah shonah me'adam la'adam. Our ability to know Torah, that's different. Each of us have a different ability. Each of us have different backgrounds. Each of us have different skill sets. And so therefore, Rav Schechter's ability to know Torah might be different than mine. He has an encyclopedic knowledge. He has an ability that I'll just never have. So he's going to be different than I am. And I'm going to be different than you, and you're going to be different than the guy sitting next to you. All of us are going to be different. L'umat Zodi says, Mitzvos Talmud Torah hamitvat be'amela Torah. But there's one commonality that every single one of us shares. And that is that every single one of us has to fight, has to strive for learning Torah. And that is something that is equal to every single Jew in the world. And so therefore, whether it's Rosh Hashanah or it's whether it's Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichrono Livracha, or it's Philip Moskowitz, or if it's someone in our outreach program. It doesn't matter. While each of us have different abilities to know Torah, there's a common denominator to every single Jew in the world, and that is Amelis B'Torah. Kevan Shehu Shaveh B'Kulam. It's Shaveh L'Chol Nefesh. It's equal to every single one of us. Every single one of us has a requirement to put in effort to learn Torah. Now, we might get out different things, right? Rosh Hechter and I can learn the same blot of Gemara. He's going to get a lot more out of it. He might go through the blot a lot faster than I am. He might understand Tosos better than I can. In an hour, he might go through the whole daf, and I might go through just a few lines. So that's going to be different between the two of us. But there's a common denominator that I share with Rosh Hechter, and that is that both of us are required to put an effort in Talmud Torah. That is something that is equal to every single Jew in the entire world. He says in the next paragraph, he gives an analogy. He says, "Agon mi ragachav amal b'torah." The ragachaver used to learn Torah, and even when he was sick, he would learn Torah. You know who else learned Torah? The sandler, in other words, the shoeman. Again, classic, prototypical, and Hasidic thought. The shoemaker, he also was learning Torah. And he says at the end of the day, if you looked at who learned more, the ragachaver or the shoemaker, you would say the ragachaver. Vaday she'agon mi ragachav osek binyanim misubachim biyoser. Of course he learned more, and of course he was able to accomplish more. However, aval shneim amlu b'torah ba'osamida. But both of them could put in the same amelis b'torah. Me breaking my teeth over a line of Torah could be the equivalent of Rav Shechter learning an entire Masechta of Shas. That could be the equivalent, but yet he and I shared a commonality, which is that we're both obligated in amelis b'torah. And he says that's why it's called a chok. Im bechukosai teilechu. Hachok b'mitzvos Talmud Torah hu amel b'torah. V'u'amekayim chukos shamayim v'aretz. Chukos shamayim v'aretz means that it's something that the world relies on. In other words, it's something that is equal to every single one of us. A chok is something that is like a law. It's a statute. It's built into the world that everybody has an equal part of it and everyone has an equal obligation to it. That's how he's understanding the word chok. Chok not necessarily in the mean that it's hidden, but chok mean that it's like a built-in law into the structure of the world. And built into the world is that every single one of us has an obligation that's equal to every single other person of Amelis B'Torah. We have to put an effort of Talmud Torah. And so he develops this idea that there are two different and distinct elements of Talmud Torah. There's Yediyas HaTorah. There's I have to know Torah. That's different everybody. People have different backgrounds. People have different educations. People have different skill sets. People have different memories. That's going to be different, everyone. And you, if you have two people sitting next to you, are going to be different than both of those people. But there's one thing that every single one of us shares in common. And that is the chok. The chok. Chuko shamayim v'aretz. In other words, the same way the sun rises and the sun sets, so too, every single one of us has an obligation of amelis b'torah. Every single one of us has an obligation to put in effort of Talmud Torah. And that is equal, that is common to every single Jew in the world. And
so, Teilechu tends to reinforce the process as opposed to Tishmoru.
Right. Teilechu reinforce the process in the sense that like it's a
journey.
It's a journey that every single person's on. Correct, 100%. And so therefore he says that's why Rashi knew specifically that Shetiyu Amelim Matorah is on the word Bichu Kosai. Because the word chok means that it applies to everybody. It's universal principle in Torah. Now, Yediyas HaTorah is not as universal. I might learn different than someone who doesn't have a background in Talmud Torah, someone who didn't have a Jewish education, someone, that's going to be different. But the chok, the part that applies to every single one of us, that is Amelis B'Torah, that is our obligation to put in our effort and be willing to break our teeth in learning Torah. Now this is, I think, a very important point. And you kind of jokingly made a reference to it, that it's not about the daf, but it's about the yomi, but I agree 100%. You know, people make a mistake in assuming that if they're not accomplishing ground, if they're not finishing masechtas, if they're not, then they're not fulfilling their mandate of Talmud Torah. But comes along the Tolner Rebbe and says there's a distinct element of Talmud Torah that's irrespective of how much you're actually learning and how many masechtas. There's something called putting in the effort. If you put in the effort, and you spend a half hour a day, and you get through a line of Chumash, or a line of Rashi, or a line of Gemara, whatever it is at your level, and that was your effort, that's the mitzvah, says the Talmud Rebbe. That's Amelis B'Torah. That's what Hashem wants from us. Now, by the way, we haven't even discussed why that's such a value. Right? We discussed that it's common to everybody. That's how we knew the word chok. Why is it such a value? So I saw beautiful Reb Chaim Sabato this week. Such a beautiful idea. He says, because when you are willing to put effort into something, when you're willing to break your teeth over something, that shows that it is a priority for you. That shows its value to you. In other words, it's a character trait, right? We're doing an exercise in the shul now, EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System. So Rabbi Goldberg and I are geeking out a little bit, and we're going to start to introduce it into the lexicon of the shul and specifically our staff. And one of the things that they talk about a lot, I just lost my train of thought, is what are your core values? Right, you as a staff to work at the Boca Raton Synagogue, what are the core values? Can you distill it down to 3 or 5 core values? And we went through this exercise today of like, what are the core values that you look in when you're looking for someone? If you want to join the Boca Raton Synagogue team, you have to have these core values: excellence, enthusiasm, integrity, like whatever those words, whatever those adjectives are going to look for. But says Reb Chaim Sabato, amelus b'Torah, that is one of the core values of Judaism. Putting in effort to what you do, putting in maximum effort to what you do, recognizing that as a core value of what it means to be a Jew means that I don't just show up, I don't just put a check mark, I don't just mail it in, but I'm amel. I recognize that the things that I put effort into, that's because I value it, that's because it's a priority of mine, and therefore I'm going to get the most out of it. That is all idea number one, beautiful idea of the Tolna Rebbe. How does he know bechukosai is a reference to Amelus B'Torah? Because it's a chok. The notion of Amelus B'Torah is something that is equal to every single one of us. That's idea number one. Idea number two, Kaveh Rabbi Mirzav, hold on. The Be'er Moshe, who wrote that? The Ajver. Okay, the Ajver. So the Be'er Moshe on Parshas Bahar says something beautiful and stunning. The Pasuk says, Ki li ha'aretz, ki gerim v'toshavim atem imadi. The Pasuk is talking about Yovel, and the Torah is describing how all the land reverts back to its original owner during the Yovel year. And then the Torah gives the rationale for this prohibition, the prohibition against selling land in perpetuity, making clear that instead, all land is going to be viewed as leased until the Yovel year, when it's going to revert back to its original owner. And in that context, the Torah says, Ki li ha'aretz, Hashem says, because the land belongs to me. Because you're really just leasing the land. In other words, you're guests on my land, but the land belongs to me. On there, this Sifra writes the following. You have it on page number 4. Again, we're following my underlines. Amru Rabosenu, Altera Be'inecha Ba, which means don't be reluctant in fulfilling this mitzvah. Okay, why? Because again, it's an inconvenient mitzvah. It's a hard mitzvah. Says the Sifra, Rashi quotes it, don't be reluctant in fulfilling this mitzvah. Why? So Rashi says, She'ina shelcha, because it doesn't belong to you. But the Sifra goes on to say, because skerim toshavim atem, al tasu atzmechem ikar. Don't make yourself the ikar. In other words, you're not, right? Sometimes we say to our kids, like, not about you, right? That's what Hashem's saying here. Not about you. Al tas atzmechem ikar. What's the Sifra talking about here? Right, we have this concept of the land reverting back in Yovel. The Sifra comes along and says, "Al tere inecha ba, don't be reluctant in fulfilling this mitzvah. Al tasu atzmecha mikar, because it's not about you. It's really about me." Like, what is going on here? So he says something so stunning and beautiful. He writes here that this serves as the foundation of our relationship to Eretz Yisrael. As a relation to Eretz Yisrael. Listen to his words. Biram kam tamnu chazal et sod kinyana shel Eretz Yisrael. This is the foundation of our relationship to Eretz Yisrael. Sheba'och benoega olam Eretz niknis bekivush u'milchama. Every other country in the world is conquered either through a battle or some form of conquest. O bedarche yeshalom bekinyanim kidome, or because there was some treaty that was signed and, you know, gave over the land. I'm reading a book about modern Jewish history, and you read about the early 20th century and the pacts that were made between France and, you know, it was a whole, you know, mishkababble there of how exactly the Middle East developed into what it is today, right? So, v'chidoma. However, he says, Hare shone Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael is different. Every other land, it's through military conquest, it's through battle, it's through some form of a treaty, but Eretz Yisrael is different. Shekinyana hi ruchani legamri. Eretz Yisrael is a spiritual acquisition. Behargasha shel geirus hamitvata beachna she'aretz eina shelanu. Eretz Yisrael isn't about military strength. It's not about being a startup nation. It's not about anything out. Rather, it's about realizing that it's not about us. She'eino shelanu. The land really doesn't belong to us. Vizesh shamru, and this is what it means. Al tasu atzmechem ikar. It's not about you, Hashem says. Kilomar ibirtzonchem she'aretz shelachem. If you want the land to belong to you, if you want Eretz Yisrael, if you want Eretz Yisrael in perpetuity, shoma aleichem lahakir. So you have to recognize she'ein lachem ba mitzad maaseichem uma. It's not because we're deserving, ela hakol mimenu yisparach, but because it's from Hashem. Kili haaretz, the Torah says. The land, Hashem says, belongs to me. Hakol mimenu yisparach. The reason why we have Eretz Yisrael is not because of Balfour. It's not because of some great military conquest. It's not because of the United Nations. It's not because of Truman. It's not because of, you know, Eddie Jacobson. It's not because of any of them. They were all shluchim of Hashem. They were all messengers of Hashem. But the reason why we have the land of Israel is because of Hashem. The land of Israel doesn't play by the rules of every other country in the world. Every other country is bound by physical limitations. It's physical land, and it's conquered in physical terms. Eretz Yisrael, says the Be'er Moshe, is a spiritual land. Ki li haaretz, Hashem says. The land belongs to me. Vizehu, he says. That's what it means. Kishetihie sheli, Hashem says, when you recognize that the land belongs to me, harehi shelachem. That's when it belongs to you. Hainu shim tedushi sheli v'lo shelachem. Only when you realize that the land is mine, that the land is a spiritual land, that it's not just a place in the desert, physical, like anywhere else in the world, but it's a spiritual homeland. It's a spiritual place. It's spiritually different. Then, az tiaretz kinyanachem. Then, and only then, will you acquire the land. That's why Rashi says later on, v'shafta aretz shabbas l'Hashem. Hashem says, I will assign to you a land. It's going to be a Shabbos to Hashem. Rashi says, l'shem Hashem, for the sake of Hashem, because that's the purpose of Eretz Yisrael. The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is to be a beacon of light, radiating Hashem's presence in dominion over the world. Ki li ha'aretz, the reason why I love this idea so much, is because it reminds us that every aspect of Eretz Yisrael is irrational. Every aspect of Eretz Yisrael is miraculous. Think about the Jewish survival, the survival of Eretz Yisrael, in our return to Eretz Yisrael after 2,000 plus years of exile. Our existence in the land of Israel this very day, with all of its challenges, and there are immense, enormous challenges every single day. And if you doom scroll like I do, first of all, you should not, because it's unhealthy. But if you doom scroll like I do, sometimes you throw up your hands and you're like, what's going to be? What's going to happen? Until you stop yourself and you realize that the existence of Eretz Yisrael, our existence in Eretz Yisrael, is beyond any logic. It defies rational thinking, and it defies clear historical patterns. Right? Anyone else, when they move to different countries, when they are kicked out of land, they assimilate and they slowly disappear, right? Their beliefs, their ideals slowly become integrated in whatever host country they're in. We Jews are different. And that is the miracle of the Jewish people, right? We've been oppressed, we've been persecuted, we've been bounced around. The Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Persians, the Crusaders, the Spanish, the Nazis, you can go through any time in Jewish history. And yet, we returned to the land of Israel in 48, in 67, and think about what we built. I mean, we could go on. I could give a whole, right, 30 minutes just on this. But think about what's grown in an area of land that throughout history, nothing grew in. People didn't want it. They wanted it because it was a crossroads. But there was nothing growing there. It was desert. It was desolate. And all of a sudden, in the last 77 years, right, think about what's grown in water, in agriculture, and I mean, it's unbelievable. It's astonishing. Says the Be'er Moshe, all of that is a fulfillment of Ki li haaretz. If we think it's our ingenuity, and if we think it's our efforts, and if we think it's our political, you know, acumen, and then you're wrong. Our success is when we realize that the land of Israel defies the laws of nature. It is an irrational existence. And therefore, we come to the realization, the reminder of Ki li haaretz, that the land belongs to Hashem. Al tasum atzmechem ikar, Hashem says. Don't make it about you. If you think it's about your own strength and your own capability, your own ingenuity, then you're just like any of the land. Lands come, lands go. Nations come, they go. But kili aretz, if you remember, if you remind yourselves that it's about me, it's l'shem Hashem, as I said, Rashi, later on, that it's about the sake of Hashem and spreading His message in the world, then and only then do we acquire the land, and only then do we have staying ability in the land of Israel. I think it's a very powerful idea from the Be'er Moshe. So idea number one was the Tolna Rebbe, idea about a Melech B'Torah, that notion, the obligation, the requirement for every single person to put in maximum effort, that is a common denominator for any Jew, whether it's the shoemaker or whether it's the Rugachever, the Sukachever, whatever Rebbe you want. It is a common denominator of every Jew throughout history. We all have an obligation to put in effort. That effort might look a little different. My effort might garner me a line of Gemara, whereas someone else's effort might garner them a line of Chumash, and someone else's an entire Masecht of Shas. But every single one of us has to put in that effort. That is a chok. It is built into the world as an obligation for every single Jew. Idea number two is this Be'er Moshe. Why does the Sifra say, Al tasu atzmechem ikar, that it's not about you? Because he writes very beautifully that the more we realize that Eretz Yisrael is not about us, but that it's about Hashem, then and only then do we acquire the land, then do we see success in the land. When it becomes about us and not about Hashem, that's when we run into problems, that's when we get kicked out of the land. Last idea is from Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is an extremely powerful idea. Rav Moshe is writing a tshuva in Yoredeya, and he's talking about times of affluence. Okay, affluence. Now, Rav Moshe was not writing this in 2025. He was writing this many years ago. I don't know the exact year. But needless to say, as it applied many years ago, probably 50 years ago, it applies even more nowadays. And Rav Moshe writes on the top of the left-hand side, he says, V'hinei b'medinasenu, in our country, me'rov ha'bracha shenasun Hashem yisbarach, in our, because Hashem has given us such bracha, yesh ratzon v'tayva gedol lahanos olam hazeh b'chol ha'tanugim shekorin lazeh. Anyone want to read that for me?
Good times.
Right, good times. Right, we have affluence. We have ability. So we have the ability to have good times. Shegam zeh davar ha'mekalkel ha'sa'adah me'od. But he says good times. And indulging in affluence has it's a double-edged sword. Shemar gilas yitzro lis os. Right? In other words, it causes you to indulge. It causes you to give into your Yetzirah. And the Torah is machbed on that. He goes on to say, the Torah does not want you to do that. The Torah wants us to control our desires. The Torah wants us to be able to limit ourselves, not give in to every desire that we have. And he goes on to say in the third underline, Vegam alzet tzrichem amorim lashkiach lamin letalmidim. Teachers, he says, we have to educate our children tovim. We have to train our children, he says, not just to seek pleasure and happiness in the bigger house and the nicer car and the fancier vacation, but we need to train the next generation to seek pleasure from things that are actually going to give them pleasure, like doing good things for other people and things that are going to give value. And by the way, we're seeing this play out in our generation. We have arguably the most affluence in world history, and yet we have the most depression, the most anxiety. Our teenagers are largely apathetic. So just because we have more doesn't mean that people are happier. Rav Moshe understood this many years ago, that we have to train our children, despite the fact that they have nice cars and nice houses and abilities and summer camps and trips to Israel and trips around the world, which is all beautiful, but that's not where you're going to find fulfillment. He says you have to teach them to find the fulfillment in Masim Tovim, in good deeds. All of that is an introduction to a reading in a Rashi in this week's Parsha. And it's such a beautiful reading from Rav Moshe. Rashi says, Ve'achaltem lachmechem lesova, that you're going to eat in abundance. That's talking about the brachos. So Rashi says, Ochel kima v'hu misbarech b'ma'ayav. You're going to eat a little bit and you're going to feel very full. Ask Rav Moshe, I don't understand. If you just told me in the Pasuk that there's going to be an abundance and there's going to be plenty, then why are you telling me that you're going to eat a little and you're going to be full? Right? I have everything. I have the you know, for those who are holding in New York, like the Marina Shmorg, which is like the best of the, you know, abundance of food all around me, right? We have the best of the best. So why part of that bracha is I'm going to only eat a little and I'm going to be full? That doesn't sound so exciting for me. That actually sounds like a curse. If I go to a shmorg and all you can eat and I fill up after 2 seconds, is that a bracha? No, that's a trip to the GI doctor the next day, right? You want to enjoy the all you can eat. You want to eat the buffet. A bracha would be, right? And I see some of the people are appreciating this analogy more than others, right? A bracha would be that you loosen up your belt a little bit, you sit down and you keep going back again and again because you want to enjoy all the shmorg. So ask Rav Moshe, Shalachora Tamula, Ezo Tzarechu Brachazu. What kind of blessing is that? You're going to go to an all-you-can-eat. You're going to pay the $30 or whatever it costs, right? But instead of going back over and over again, the bracha I give you is that you should fill up on the first piece of rice that you eat, right? Says Rav Moshe, that's a bracha, right? How is that a bracha, he says. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, no, that's exactly the bracha. V'im kein hara yesh lachem harbe. Of course you're going to have a lot. Ma lechol. V'yelem sova. Av k'she yitztarchu lechol harbe. Aval hu ha'adam ha'shalim. Av sheish bracha meruba v'shefa rav. Yodea l'tzamtzim ta'avosav la'anos haguv. He says the bracha is that even though you have a lot, and even though you're at the all-you-can-eat buffet, but you know how to appreciate every little thing you have. You know how to be appreciative of any little thing that you have. And so even though you're going to be overwhelmed with bracha, but my bracha to you is that even that, you should appreciate every little bite of food that you take. Every bite of food should be delicious to you, and you should appreciate it. Rak l'mashi yish lo tzorech behem. Ve'ashef ha'bracha sh'nasan Hashem yizbarach yodea. Hashem didn't give this all to you just so you can indulge it. Just because it's in front of you doesn't mean you have to have it. You should eat what you need and you should recognize the bracha from Hashem. And so therefore, says Rav Moshe, that's how you read this very strange Rashi. Again, the Pasuk tells us, you're going to have an abundance of food. You're going to go to the all you can eat. There's going to be tables and tables and tables of food. But, ochel kimavum is barach. Rashi says, but you're going to eat a little bit and you're going to be full. Says Rav Moshe, how's that a bracha? That seems like a curse. He says, no, the bracha is just because you have it doesn't mean you have to indulge in it. That there is a beauty, there's strength in being able to tell yourself, no. There's a strength in being able to restrain yourself and restrict yourself. Just because we live in a world of abundance, Baruch Hashem, doesn't mean that we have to benefit from every single element of abundance around us. That it's okay to tell yourself no. It's okay to train yourself that just because you're at the all-you-can-eat buffet, that you're not necessarily mean you have to eat everything, that you're going to have indigestion afterwards and you're going to have heartburn afterwards, right? That's a consequence sometimes of eating too much. That's a muscle that we have to develop. We have to have the ability to tell ourselves no. I once heard from Dr. Pelkovitz, who said that he was at a school in New York City. He was giving a class about teaching our children self-restraint, teaching our children the value of like telling themselves no, that it's okay to be able to restrain yourself. And he finishes his whole lecture, and afterwards a parent comes up to him, and Dr. Pelkovitz, it was a great lecture. I said one question. He goes, how am I supposed to train my child to say no to themselves when I don't know how to say no to myself, right? If I can't stop myself, if I don't have the ability to restrain myself, how do I expect other people, how do I expect to model that for my children as well? Now, why is this value of restraint so central to Judaism, right? Why would that be counted amongst the brachos? So we've spoken about this in the past, that if you look at Matan Torah, surrounding Matan Torah, there's an enormous amount of allusions to restraints. Vigbalta Bahar, that there was a barrier around Har Sinai, that you were not allowed to go up, right? That word comes up over and over again, by Har Sinai. Why is restraint so central to Har Sinai? And the answer is, because part of being a Jew is the ability to tell yourself no, right? I'm on vacation, I'm hungry. That's very nice. Doesn't mean I can just go and eat anything I want. Doesn't mean I can go into any restaurant and get any food that I want. I'm restricted. I have to be able to tell myself no. Right, just because I have desires, just because I have, doesn't mean I can look at everything, doesn't mean I can have everything, doesn't mean I can do anything I want whenever I want. There are restrictions that Judaism, halacha, places upon us. So fundamental to receiving the Torah is this ability, this muscle memory of being able to tell ourselves, no, that I have self-control. I know how to restrain myself. We could go on and on. There's a beautiful piece by the Pia Zetzner about this where he says that to train yourself, he says, I know it sounds silly, but when they're giving out the meat at the Shabbos table and your eye is on like a delicious piece of filet mignon and you're eyeing it as it's passing around, you're like, I hope no one takes my piece. He says, when that piece comes to you, take a different piece. Not because that there's anything consequential about it, but in that moment, you've shown yourself that you are in control of your desires are not in control of you. And the more you're able to manifest that control in quote-unquote trivial, silly incidents, when it comes for a real test, when your desires are really tested, then you'll have built up that muscle memory and you'll have enabled yourself to tell yourself no. So we saw three ideas. The first idea is the Tona Rebbe, this idea of Amelis B'Torah. How did Rashi know, B'chukosai Teilechu? How did he know, Shetu Amelim B'Torah, that a chok is synonymous with Amelis B'Torah? He says, because it applies to every single one of us. All of us on our own level have to put an effort into learning Torah. There's no excuse. We might learn different amounts. We might acquire different amounts of knowledge, but every single one of us is required to put in the effort. Idea number two is from the Ber Moshe. I think it was my favorite idea. I don't know if you saw me get passionate about it. Of Kili Haaretz, a reminder of what Eretz Yisrael is. It's not a land like every other land. It's a spiritual land. It is a land that defies logic and is irrational and beyond any historical patterns. Why? Because it belongs to Hashem. And the more we recognize that, the more we lean into that, the more we realize it's not just about us, but it's about a conduit in with which we can share and spread Hashem to the world, then we will acquire the land of Israel. And the last idea is from Ramosha, this really strange Rashi, where the Torah tells us you're going to have abundance. And Rashi says that means you're going to eat a little bit and you're going to be full. We said, how is that a bracha? He says, because the bracha is just because you live in a world of abundance, Baruch Hashem, B'li Ayin Hara, doesn't mean you have to have everything, doesn't mean you have to indulge in anything, that there is a value and an ability to be able to tell yourself no, recognizing that your desires don't control you, but you control your desires. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.